Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Not like he's being called for banning in Legacy or anything.
I think it's kind of funny that they have 249 cards for Masters 25.
Do you see that art? It looks like a Megadeth album cover.
They're pretty much the ultimate big bad enemy of the multiverse.
I don't think it's as far stretched as some people may think.
They want to slam up against the opponent's defense and just say, I'm bigger than you, I'm going to win. Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined with my co-host here, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay today, guys.
Wonderful. Well, it is an exciting time right now, preview season for M25, and we got Dominaria coming right around the corner.
The season for M25 is done.
The preview season has concluded, correct. It is Friday. Full spoiler is up, and I got to tell you, I am so excited about it, and we'll dig into that a little bit later on in the episode, but in light of us returning to Dominaria, we wanted to bring another story to you guys, and Greg, what story are we talking about today?
Jaya Ballard, but before we get into that, we want to remind you of our sponsor.
Who is our sponsor, Greg?
Flipside Gaming, where you could get yourself a pre-order box of Dominaria, and when you use our code WINCONDITION in all caps, you'll get 10% off. It'll be $100 plus tax.
And they give that free shipping on orders over $100.
Oh, man, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yep.
And remember, when you do that, that'll give us the ability to give you more giveaways, like the one we're doing soon.
Exactly. All right, nice. Okay, well, let's jump on into it. Let's take a turn and head over to Lore Corner.
A return to the past.
In the future.
An awakening has happened.
All right.
Who is her parents?
So, this week's story, we're going to be covering Jaya Ballard. And she first surfaced early on in Magic's history. In fact, her earliest childhood is still kind of shrouded in mystery, but she did learn to become a thief on the streets. So already she's, you know, got those street smarts, very cunning.
A wily person.
A wily person indeed. One day, she tried to steal something from Archmage Eternal Joda, who we should definitely review in a later story, but was unsuccessful. Joda's a very, very powerful mage. Archmage, in fact. But he sensed magical capabilities within Jaya, so he allowed her to study in the School of the Unseen. But after learning a few spells, she decided to set out into the world and make a living on her own as a task mage.
So, very red of her.
Very red, very impulsive, very, very passionate. And during her travels, she actually once helped Kolbjorn and received an amulet capable of summoning the planeswalker Freylis. She was also very instrumental in defending a Kjeldurin village from a Lehurgoif. It's a little bit of brief history into her early life, but where we really start to sink our teeth into Jaya Ballard comes in the Ice Age block of Magic. Greg, do you want to take us through that?
Oh, man. That sounds like something that happened with, like, Dark Depths.
Dark Depths, definitely.
So, I'm just going to go word for word here. Jaya later tracked Joda to Tressorhorn after he disappeared, which, as you know, Joda worked with her.
Yes.
He'd been drugged by the Findorn pollen by Limduel.
Ooh.
Limduel is horrible.
Limduel is an evil creature, yes.
And made to think that he was a summoned creature. Remember, this time of Magic, planeswalkers would summon other creatures from other planes. It worked a little differently than how we see it now. So they knew they would be summoned and would return.
Correct.
She rescued him, and Joda became sick and delusional because of the pollen, so Jaya summoned Fraileys.
Dun-dun-dun.
Of course she wanted something in return. No way could it be that simple. She wanted to use Joda's mirror and resources of the school and unseen to prepare for her world spell, which I think had something to do with the Phyrexians. Jaya was in no position to offer these, and she agreed, though, on Joda's behalf.
Right, and just to interject real quick, that world spell that you referenced was to end the Ice Age in Dominaria. I mean, it was a humongous undertaking, and the mirror that you're talking about from Joda, we'll definitely cover that later, but it's a very, very powerful mirror, very powerful artifact.
Does it possibly have something to do with maybe Mirror Universe?
I don't know if it goes that deep, but continue, please.
Okay. Okay. So, Jaya was instrumental in Joda's plans to procure Kel'jor for the upcoming invasion by Limdul. The alliance between Kel'jor and Balduvia during his final assault, Limdul's that is, Jaya fought against Chaska, Limdul's right hand, and was successful in her battle, which means she defeated Chaska. Now, this is not to be confused with Cheska, which we later find out in Apocalypse.
Yes.
She claimed Limdul's ring as a battle trophy, and sadly, the ring would make her a slave to the will of Marisil, the pretender.
Right, and actually, literally, she found Limdul's hand on the ground and pulled the ring off of it, you know, not knowing the true power of the ring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Then, during the next 20 years, she was a leader of a group of mages who tried to protect the city of Kelsinko from being flooded by rising seas, but she did not do very well.
Oh, no. Release the flood. Womp womp.
Yeah. That's no fun.
Yep. All right. Well, then, after Ice Age, we have the set Alliances, and the story continues with Shattered Alliance. So, 20 years after the casting of this world spell, Jaya suddenly appeared in the School of the Unseen to see Joda, who she had not seen since Limdul's assault. She brought Joda an emaciated, blackened hand of Limdul, here we go, with one of its fingers removed. Uh-oh. The finger with the ruby ring, Marisil's ring, was missing. Joda and Jaya set out to search for the missing ring, fearing that Joda's ancient enemy had returned. So Joda is very aware of what is in the ring. Jaya has it, but does not tell Joda about this. So there's a little bit of, a little bit of secret subversion going on here just within Jaya already. So they travel to Tresshorn, Kjeld. Lavisia Cold Eyes' Balduvian camp. And finally to Soldev.
So, Tressorhorn, Keld, and Lavisa are all characters.
Yes, Lord Tressorhorn.
Okay.
I've seen that card many times.
I believe it's Maroxis of Keld and Lavisa.
Right. And let's not forget Keldan Warlord, that wonderful over-muscly brute. So during this journey, Joda realized that Jaya had somewhat changed since her younger years. My precious. And she often behaved strangely. When they reached Soldev and visited the vaults of the Andenates, the truth was revealed. In the aftermath of Limdul's battle against Kjeldor and Balduvia, Jaya found the finger and the ring and decided to bring them to Joda, hoping that they would help him. However, she donned the ruby ring, and Marisil the Pretender's spirit infected her mind. Oh my gosh, Jaya, how could you? Oh, it's a terrible decision. So, being influenced by Marisil, this evil, evil being, she cut Joda's throat, using his blood to revive the Phyrexian war beasts. Jeez, talk about savage. Joda miraculously saved himself from certain death with the help of his mirror. He then battled the possessed Jaya in the debris of ruined Soldev. He managed to shatter his mirror directly onto her face, triggering the, quote, reward from Fraileys, who, as you'll learn later in the story of Joda, she imbued his mirror with the power to ignite a spark. Now, Joda, unfortunately, wasn't able to have his spark ignited. He was never destined to be a planeswalker, but it worked on Jaya. In the blazing inferno that followed this breakpoint, Jaya's own planeswalker spark flared. With a thought, she erased Marisil's tainted presence once and for all, just like that. Then planeswalked to the School of the Unseen and destroyed said rampaging Phyrexian war beasts. With Joda's help, she cut and sealed the bottomless pit that Limdul relocated there from Tressahorn with the agreement of Gerda Aga's daughter. Aga's daughter. Finally, she helped Gerda with finding a new location for the School of the Unseen, of course.
Right. Nobody can see that.
As a parting gift, Jaya gave Joda an amulet, allowing him to remain sane despite his age, and allowing him to live as long as he willed. She then departed Dominaria for the wider multiverse, so doing the planeswalker thing, taking off and exploring.
Which, one of those things we know is starting the School of the Pyromancer.
Indeed. Absolutely.
On Koldotha?
Regatha?
Regatha. Thank you. All right. So then we have a couple other things. We have her presumed death. Joda later mentions that Jaya Ballard had died in the period between the end of the Ice Age, when she was seen for the last time in the present, the cause being her recklessness and impetuousness that eventually cost her her life. It is neither known where and when this event happened, nor how Joda knows about it. There is also some suspicion that the Joda who said this came from an alternate reality, and thus was referring to another Jaya. This is in the Time Spiral Planar Chaos block, where we get to see alternate timeline versions, and Joda is still a young buck. I think in that universe, he gets a spark, whereas Jaya did not.
Well, spoiler alert, Joda actually is hiding out in a fountain in which the water is very similar to the water in the slow time bubble. So as a result, he ages at a glacial pace, just like Joyra does.
What?
Yes.
So you mean to say he has found the fountain of youth?
Yes, dude. Yeah, we got to do the story of Joda coming up here pretty soon. I honestly believe...
Coming soon. You know, we still have maybe another week before.
Yep, before the story starts coming out.
I know, right? And then the next bit that we know is we see an older lady that looks possibly like Jaya wearing her goggles on a skyship with Jace and Gideon.
Correct. And I'm sorry, going back to what you were saying about when she was exploring the multiverse, who may have gone and studied on Regatha under Jaya Ballard's tutelage?
None other than our very own Chandra Nalar.
Ooh, yeah. So, you can see here that they are setting up for something big on Dominaria here. We know we're returning to Ravnica, and that's going to have a lot to do with Nicol Bolas and his plot on trapping planeswalkers with his army of Eternals, but, oh my gosh, I'm just like... shaking. I'm on the edge of my seat here just to see what happens in Dominaria when we get... Because isn't Dominaria the thought behind this, like the mana is beginning to regenerate, the plane is starting to kind of revive itself after being obliterated? I mean, is that pretty correct? Or
I would sure hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's very, very, very exciting. So that's going to be our story here for Jaya Ballard. And if you are unfamiliar, we will let's go over the card here, Jaya Ballard, Task Mage. And so we get a originally printed in Time Spiral. Jaya Ballard, Task Mage is one red. For a 2/2 legendary human spell shaper. And she has three abilities. You can tap a red and tap her, discard a card, destroy target blue permanent. Look at that color hate right there. You can tap one in a red and tap her, discard a card. Jaya Ballard Task Mage deals 3 damage to target creature or player. A creature dealt damage this way can't be regenerated this
incineration.
Turn.
Incineration.
Exactly.
Remember, no more incinerations.
Yep. Yep. And then you have 5 red and tap, discard a card. Jaya Ballard deals 6 damage to each creature and each player.
You know, that sounds a lot like a Flame Wave.
That does. Sounds a lot like an Inferno, too.
Ah, that's the card I'm thinking. Flame Wave, I think, does 5.
You know, I could see Jaya being good in some sort of a Madness deck with the recent Shadows Over Innistrad printing. You know, you could get some pretty sweet value out of some Madness cards there.
You could. You were pretty right there.
Yeah. And it looks like she's received a promotional foil printing as well.
Oh, yeah. 2 of them, you know, right?
And she was, well, yeah, she was also in the Fire and Lightning premium deck series.
But no new art yet. Now, you do know these were the a little bit of history on R&D. These were their first try at Planeswalkers.
Yep.
Who was the other one?
Who was the other? Oh, my gosh.
That was a try at a Planeswalker card.
You got me. I don't know. I'm not even going to try. Who is it?
Teferi.
Oh, you're right.
Because he was a creature that had 3 abilities, and that was the thing that they were testing out as creatures with 3 abilities.
You're absolutely right. Which is why you may hear Deathrite Shaman lovingly referred to as a 1-mana Planeswalker, because he does have 3 abilities.
Yeah, yeah, he's kind of busted.
Yeah, definitely.
Only kind of. Not like really busted, just kind of.
Not like he's being called for banning in Legacy or anything, you know. Not too bad.
Yeah, yeah, that thing.
Yep. All right, so that's Jaya and her story. Let's move on here. Greg, we have a massive amount of stuff to talk to in regards to this new set that has been spoiled over the course of just 1 week. I don't know.
There's only 249 cards in this set.
Well, then why don't we make haste and travel on over to As Foretold.
You know, I think it's kind of funny that they have 249 cards, and this is for Masters 25. They could have just added one card to have 250. You know, well, like Black Lotus.
You know, far be it from Wizards to throw a cookie here and there into their sets, you know. And there's been, okay, let's just get this out of the way. There's been a lot of speculation due to the fact that people on social media have expressed their dissatisfaction with the overall value of the set in terms of, like, the mythics that they have printed. Even the rares to some extent. And people have gone so far even as to say, well, they might throw masterpieces into M25.
Doubt it.
Let's
now, something that I could see happening for the foil sheet of this, honestly, this is something that I would be excited for. What if they did old borders on the foil sheet?
Well, I'll tell you what, that would make a whole heck of a lot of people happy.
And, you know, they still have the rights. It could be within the realm of possibility. Of course,
we won't know
until we get it in 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, okay, so the card frame is definitely different than it was during the time of the old border. If you get a chance and you're on YouTube, go and check out the video called Frames, put on by, I believe it's the Magic Man Sam. He goes through the entire history of the card frame throughout, you know, Magic's existence.
Does he include the Odyssey tries?
He does.
The Odyssey where they did it? Okay, good.
He goes through every iteration a card border has seen. It's amazing. So definitely please go and check it out. But one of the things that I'm noticing here is the thickness of the color background on each of these cards is so narrow in these new cards versus what it was before, which leaves more room for text and art, which is great. But, you know, with the old borders, like the artifact border, for example, that a lot of people are clamoring for, if they were to just change the color of the background, then that would be not as, you know, impactful, because you really wouldn't see as much of it. So I don't really foresee them going back to the old border framing as much as
I don't think
like
it's
it.
A go back to. I just think is a throw me a bone. They did older border styling for foils only.
That's true. But then you're talking about different sized images, different sized text box, different size.
I mean, imagine that they, with how it is, we have a lot more black framing on ours or colored framing. They didn't have that then. So based on it, we're only losing a difference of amount, but it's not like they'd be doing an exactly the same old one. They would be an upgraded version of the new stuff. It would just be a flashback to the old style. But, that's just me dreaming.
Yeah, no, that's true. And the difference that in the framing, like let's take the masterpieces, for example. You know, those are obviously way out there in terms of different frames. But if you were to introduce every foil in this set, you know, with a different frame, that's 249 cards that you'd have to print with a different frame. That seems a little bit, you know.
Well, they're already printing them on a separate sheet. All they would have to do is redesign it and get coloring in there. I don't think it's as far stretch as some people may think.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, anything's possible. So all we can do is wait and see.
Look at the borders on the Lands and Ixalan when they flip. That was supposed to be a masterpiece border.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Very true. So, all right. Well, Greg, we have a lot of cards here in
think there's a few that we should really be talking about.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and pick a few, and we'll talk about it and why it's kind of important and exciting. So,
and disappointing.
Yeah. I'm not
disappointed at all. Matter of fact, I'm happy for some reprints here, like really happy.
But I think
my number one. What's your number one?
What's my number one?
What's your number one reprint that you're excited for?
Okay, this is gonna sound really, really silly.
It's Lightning Bolt.
It's actually Street Wraith, because that is like the one card that has been holding me back from really digging into a Grixis Death Shadow deck in Modern. And they used to be $10 a piece, I think, and I had one. Yeah. From Modern Masters, the original one. I actually sold it when it was at about that $10 mark to, you know, get some value for it at the time. I mean, it seemed like it was able to be reprinted. It hadn't been reprinted for a very long time, but the fact that we're getting a Street Wraith reprint means that, you know, when, you know, I get my box, even if I don't pull four of them, they're going to be a lot easier for me to acquire. And Grixis Death Shadow is a deck that I've really wanted to play for the longest time, but just haven't been willing to shell out the $40 to get a play set of Street Wraiths. So, honestly, out of everything, like Jace the Mind Sculptor included, Street Wraith is probably my most exciting card that's getting a reprint.
Okay.
What would your number one reprint be?
My number one reprint is this new art Imperial Recruiter.
Yo, it's a good one.
There's a lot of great cards in here, and I'm excited for pretty much every single one of them. I mean, even all the way down to Tree of Redemption. But Master Recruiter getting a non-Judge Foil
Imperial
reprint.
Recruiter.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, what'd I say?
Yeah. He said Master Recruiter.
Maybe I was thinking Master of the Guard.
Masters Recruiter 25 Recruiter.
Anyhow, Imperial Recruiter, it's just so nice to get it reprinted because, I mean, everybody actually wants to play this card in EDH because having the ability to search something up 2 power or less is amazing. You could get so many different things that you would never think about. It's just real strong.
And it's a tutor in red. It is a tutor in red, which is extremely rare.
It really is.
Right.
And then before, we were talking a little bit about how there are so many cards in here that have never had a foil printing that will be like Flash.
Yep. Oh.
Or
you can play Flash Hulk in Limited if you pull the right cards. That's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean,
Ancient Craving, Magus of the Wheel, bunch of Commander cards that are being reprinted in here that I'm quite happy for.
One of the few cards I am excited to see a pack foil is going to be Living Death.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And then I think it has like all the Commander cards, Magus of the Wheel, Myriad Landscape, Ash Barons. It's pretty bonkers for those.
Yeah. No, I think that a lot of interest in this set, I mean, with me specifically, comes with the fact that we're going to get to see a lot of cards at the common level that have never had that foil printing before. Like you said, Ash Baron's a perfect example, Myriad Landscape, and they're quickly, being very, a lot of people are coveting these brand new foils. We mentioned last episode that the first time Brainstorm got printed as a foil, it was, $60, $70 card. Now, these cards probably aren't going to be played at such great lengths at, the highest competitive levels. But still, you have a lot of Commander decks, players who play Commander who really like to foil their deck out and get the best-looking cards possible. I know for even a card like Animar, it's seen maybe one other promotional foil printing, but this is going to give people a great opportunity, and Prosh included too, to get some really powerful older commanders, before they printed them in foil in the actual pre-constructed decks, enable them to get their hands on some foil cards to use as generals.
So here's one, I think my next most favorite card that I'm excited for, getting a reprint here. It's a black card. It's been downgraded to a common. It's a 3-drop, 2/2. It's also known as the Relentless Rat.
Relentless Rats at common. Holy cow. Talk about a crazy draft format.
Talk about new popper.
I hadn't even thought of that. Oh my gosh. You can have a popper Relentless
Mind
Rats
blown.
Deck.
I'm pretty good at that, so. But yeah, no, it's definitely exciting. Like, this is great. Other cards in here that are really cool. Andrew called it last time we spoke. Stang did get a reprint.
That's right.
But I don't think you're going to see, like, Stang Twin getting reprinted in Modern in this set. Like,
oh, man.
It's one of those cards that's just like, yeah, it's a card. Yeah, it does something interesting. But is it really... And even to a point, Stang, I would say, is a somewhat iconic card. People know what that is if they've really been playing Magic for a while. Does it really need to get a reprint? Do new players really need to know what's going on here? Probably not.
Yeah, he said something like, I don't even think Stang is that, impactful, but look at this here. We've got Stang at uncommon. That's another thing to talk about here, Greg, is the fact that we have a lot of legendary creatures being printed at uncommon. What the heck?
Oh, man, there's a bunch of them. I mean, Kong Min, the Sleeping Dragon.
Yep.
We're getting a lot of great cards at that uncommon level, which means popper commander, because remember, your general can be an uncommon.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
It's really cool to see a lot of these cards, and things like Boros Charm getting reprinted means the price is gonna drop.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think of that, about that new art on Coalition Relic?
First of all, I am extremely excited that they reprinted Coalition Relic, because there are so many decks out there that need this, so many EDH decks out there that need this. I think the new art on this is pretty sweet. I mean, the old one definitely will hold a place in my heart, but, I really like the looks of this one. It's got a little bit, greater detail to it. I think the fact that, they printed it at rare is great. Because this was a card that had steadily climbed up north of like $10 recently.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to pick mine up for like $2 back in the day. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be around that price again coming up here. Speaking of prices and dropping, I don't know how hard a mythic printing is going to start dropping prices, but for the love of God, Chalice of the Void and Ensnaring Bridge have both needed reprints something fierce for a while now. They were really starting to get really expensive.
Yeah.
And I know they're prison cards, and some people have polarized opinions on them, but again, I mean, I must have had some sort of a subconscious vision, but, you know, I recently sold Chalice of the Void when it was north of $70, and all of a sudden, boom, it's getting a reprint, which is, you know, it's kind of exciting to see something like that happen. But definitely want to go back in and see if I can grab myself, because that's like a modern staple. If you want to play modern in your sideboard for a bunch of different decks, you're going to want that Chalice of the Void. And recently, even burn decks are running Ensnaring Bridge. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. No, because, I mean, Death Shadow can't attack with Ensnaring Bridge pretty much any time.
Exactly. I think the only feasible option I've heard is if you're playing Affinity, you can attack with that Ornithopter and then attach your cranial plating. But, you know, that's a very, very corner case scenario. But overall, that Ensnaring Bridge is just a pain in the butt to deal with. So how about all the speculation on what that metallic-looking dude was on the packaging? Nobody, and I repeat, nobody said Sundering Titan. What's up with that?
I actually did say, oh, it could be a Sundering Titan. But I didn't say it on here, so no proof. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, they were saying Blightsteel Colossus. They were saying Platinum Empyrean. But no, it's Sundering Titan. And, I mean, just playing this format in Limited is going to be so much fun. There's going to be so many combinations of cards that you never would have seen otherwise. But now it is more than a possibility. It is a reality. You're going to be able to play Stang and
Animar. You know,
and Animar in the same deck? Like, oh, that's
adding
amazing.
Adding that in, like, other things like Laquatus Champion. Animar is going to be a beast in this format, honestly.
It
but
really
there's
going
to be a lot of really strong cards. I mean, Relentless Rats with Animar, right?
Yep. 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 And
they're black, black.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you're going to have your draw engines with, obviously, Jace the Mind Sculptor and Niv-Mizzet the Fire Mine. I mean, can you imagine having Jace and Niv out at the same time? You'll be drawing all the cards and doing all the damage. And
Hey, I want to know what you think. What do you think about the fact that there is only one Planeswalker in this set?
You know what? I'm okay with that. Because if you look at Magic's 25 years of history, there's been a great portion of it, Commander products included, that don't include Planeswalker cards on the norm, you know? And Planeswalkers have become a focal point of Wizards and Magic sets that they print. And it's kind of defined what, you know, Standard and Modern and even some Legacy decks, you know, rotate around is these Planeswalker cards. And the fact that you're able to play in this amazing draft format with only one Planeswalker is huge. I think that's awesome. I think that's great. Okay. And I also think it's awesome that with all this card draw, they threw Notion Thief in there as well. That's going to be fun to get someone with, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially if they have built an Accumulated Knowledge in a Mizzet deck.
Oh, my gosh. Again, the possibilities are absolutely endless. And
I don't know. There's only 250 cards. I don't say they're endless.
Well, let's talk about iterations here and see what we're actually capable of doing. Because, you know, limited decks, you can have 5, 6, 7 cards, you know, of any one card. Because, you know, the rules don't apply. But you were right. We got the Dark Ritual. You know, you called that one. That was pretty sweet.
Called Giant Growth, too.
You called what?
I called Giant Growth, too.
No, Giant Growth, yeah. I think that might have... Has that seen more printings than any other card out there?
Giant Spider might have more.
Oh, I think you're right. Giant Spider Dove. And I mean, Swords to Plowshares, how could you not? But here's this other one, and this one was actually very close to being on the same level as Street Wraith for me with getting a reprint is Simeon Spirit Guide. That card, it you know, promotes so much in terms of, you know, degenerate deck building. And the fact that you can just get that extra mana, it's like a instant speed Lotus Petal. It's so good. And I just think that, you know, now again, I'll be able to acquire a playset of this finally, just because there's so many, you know, decks out there that really get a bump in power by getting that extra red mana out of nowhere. So yeah, Simeon Spirit Guide is definitely another one of my favorite reprints out of this set. Curse Catcher, hello. This uncommon here has never been reprinted save its original printing. So you can start to build those competitive merfolk decks.
Again. Ancient,
what's that?
Again.
Again, yeah. Ancient Stirrings, another massively, you know, staple-y card in the modern format. Yes, staple-y is a word. And then, oh, going back to first-time foil printings, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Reform. First time you're going to get a Reform foil printing. It's such a good card in Commander. You know, I really think it's definitely deserving of a foil printing here.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nope. Nope.
So.
And then you get up into the Mythics, and yeah, I know, Tree of Redemption's in there. So what? You know, you can't have all your cards be ridiculously expensive.
I don't know. Tree of Redemption is a sweet card to have reprinted. I mean, even if it's in the $2, $3 range, who the hell cares? The card's good.
I'm on par with you there. I think it is a great card.
I am surprised we didn't get, like, a Doran effect in here, though.
True. True. I mean, butts matter. I mean, you could...
Oh, wait. We did.
What's that?
Twisted Image.
Ooh.
Which switches power and toughness until end of turn.
Oh my gosh. So is that an instant?
Yeah.
What color is that?
Blue.
Blue? Oh, there it is. Okay.
In a blue-white-green deck where you have Kong Ming, the Sleeping Dragon, where you give all your creatures +1/+1, that makes it a 114. If you change your life total, it becomes like a 121. And then okay. You swing for 21.
So rules question here, and I apologize, I do not know the official answer to this, but you activate your Tree of Redemption. Oh,
sure.
Wait, no, I'm thinking differently. Never mind. I was thinking of that black tree that we got from Eldritch Moon.
Oh, but, yeah, that does it with the opponent's life. No,
yeah.
This one does it with your life.
Right, okay, all right. But just while we're on the subject, if you were to use that tree, and while that trigger's on the stack, you Twisted Image it, would that work?
You mean, so in response to it being activated, you twist and image it so that it dies?
Correct, but the trigger's still on the stack.
And it would check for, power being zero? Would that kill a player?
Yes.
Probably.
Tree of Perdition. Tap, exchange target opponent's life total with Tree of Perdition's toughness. So you tap that, send that ability on the stack. Twisted Image, your Tree
of
Perdition.
Make sure Twisted Image is actually a instant.
It is. It is. I just checked. So.
Okay.
Wow. Wow.
There you go. Opened up your mind to a possibility.
We brew here on the Wind Condition. So, that's what you get.
Talking about brews, wasn't there a big event recently?
You know, there really was. By the way, before we leave, Hell's Caretaker... Is this time we're getting a foil printing of Hell's Caretaker?
Yes.
Ooh, that's going to be spicy. That's going to be really...
And do you see that art? It looks like a Megadeth album cover.
It really does. Well said. Well said. Oh, my gosh.
I could be good at saying things sometimes.
There you go. But yeah, Hell's Caretaker first time foil printing. And then you also had an award to give for quickest reprint, Greg, right?
I did. So we have the quickest card to be reprinted that I've ever seen. That being Ravenous Chupacabra.
Wait a minute. They can't put Ravenous Chupacabra in this set. That's ridiculous.
Why not?
Oh, wait. There it is.
Why not? I mean, it is the single most powerful card currently in Standard, not to mention that it has had a lot of talk about it. So it really has. Pretty iconic in 25 years of Magic.
You know what I think this is actually going to do? I think this is going to create an insanely high demand for the Ravenous Chupacabra with the watermark on it. I think this version is going to actually be a lot more sought after than the one from Rivals of Ixalan.
You know what? You might be right.
Yeah. There's a lot of people excited about these watermarks being on these cards.
Obviously for Watermark, right?
Obviously. I mean, why not? But, yeah, no, it just makes it look a whole heck of a lot better. And the foils are going to look really nice. One other card. I'm sorry. I just keep on one-moring. One more time. Unearth for one black.
Oh, man, you see that art on that?
Yeah, you know how excited I got for Claim to Fame. I mean, this is even better. You know, this is it does it for a bigger casting cost, and you can cycle it. This is, it's so good. And
so what's that crawling out of the earth?
Is that an Eldrazi?
No, I'm pretty sure that is a Phyrexian Negator.
Ooh, and the flavor text on it, no matter how deep you bury it, some evil refuses to stay dead.
Right.
Oh, it's so good.
I don't know. It feels like that's definitely the Phyrexians, because in all honesty, the Phyrexians have always been a problem in Magic, and we have been dealing with them almost since the get-go.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They're pretty much the ultimate big bad enemy of the multiverse here. Yeah. I mean, the Eldrazi, they're just kind of existing, you know, and the whole death and destruction is just a side effect. So these Phyrexians actually mean, you know, total and complete harm and malcontent. So
you're a malcontent.
Oh, well, on that note, we can go back to talking about events. We had Grand Prix Memphis.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we had Grand Prix Memphis this last weekend, which was the first Standard tournament that was broadcast on Twitch, the first Grand Prix post-banning of course, Attune with Aether.
Right.
Rogue Refiner.
All those energies, the red deck win stuff.
Yep, and the... that red dinosaur.
Rampaging
Ferocidon, thank you.
And Ramunap Ruins.
Yes. Okay, so...
Hey, Wilmot, before we jump into this, what did we expect we were going to see post-banning? We knew about these bannings. What did we think we were going to see as decks? Do you remember?
I think we were claiming that with the absence of Attune with Aether and Rogue Refiner... there was still a Grixis energy deck that was floating around out there. Mm-hmm. And even with the banning of Ramunap Ruin and Rampaging Ferocidon, there was still a huge shell of a red deck that was going to be pretty good.
Yep.
So on that note, let's dive in here to the top eight for Grand Prix Memphis. And then there's a couple other decks that we want to talk about a little bit later. But first, let's go over the new Standard metagame here. And upon looking at placement here, it appears that the finals match was... there was an intentional draw.
Who would do a thing like that?
We have Tyler Schroeder on Red Green Monsters beating Aaron Barich on Sultai Constrictor.
Well, so, he only beats him because of tiebreakers, honestly. But they both tied for second.
Right. Okay. So let's start, you know, let's continue on down. And we'll go into decks a little bit later here. But what were the next two decks out there, Greg?
After Monsters and Constrictor, we had Grixis Energy. That tops out your top four. Going down to the 5th through 8th position, so 6th through 8, we've got Blue-Black Control, Grixis Energy, Mardu Vehicles, Blue-Black Control.
Yep. So it looks like we have two Blue-Black Control decks, we have three Grixis Energy decks, and then we have, there it is again, Mardu Vehicles, Sultai Constrictor, and Red-Green Monster. And I gotta say, considering the saturation of Teemer Energy and Mono Red, pre-banning, this is not that bad. This is pretty good in terms of diversity.
Yeah. No, I agree completely, actually.
And I think it's interesting that we are seeing a resurgence of Control. You know, there's been a lot of people who have been, you know, a little skeptical to say that Control is where it's at. You know, there's been a Grixis Control deck floating out around there with, like, one copy of Nicol Bolas and some Splash. We got some Scarab Gods, some Torrential Gear Hulks. But, yeah, no, straight up Grixis energy, like aggressive Grixis energy. Dude, I keep on saying, I'll go back to one of my favorite black energy cards in the recent past has been Glintsleeve Siphoner. You know, that card is
that card's not good.
It's been extremely powerful, and it performs on another level consistently. Yeah, that card just makes any deck a lot better, you know? It's the new Dark Confidant. I'm just, you know, that one in conjunction with any other thing that produces energy, even an Aether Hub, you know, just gets you that extra
value.
What if
it's even a Winding Constrictor?
Oh, if you got a Winding Constrictor, you're loving life. So, do you want to, you know what? This is actually a pretty good time. Why don't we take this show on into our final segment? Let's go into the Brewmaster's Lair.
Can I get a small coffee, please?
Sure. We can brew that up for you. No problem.
Nice.
All right. So, red-green monsters. We haven't seen this deck be very prominent since, like, back in the Theros block. So, I mean, it has some elements that we've seen before, but it's just kind of mashing two things together to become even stronger.
Do you see what it's one of its prominent cards is?
I see a lot of prominent cards, but what's the one you're thinking of?
Jade Light Ranger.
Absolutely. I mean, this card is just straight up value. A lot of people are considering this the replacement for Rogue Refiner in New Standard.
Yeah.
But the fact that on its own, you know, can come down as a 4/3 for 4 is huge, or it could draw you cards, or any combination of the two.
It's a really, just really good card. And then you pair this up with other cards. I think this one, I'm surprised. I don't see any Rish cards here. Sometimes you'll see these red-green monster decks with Rishkar into a Vert or Scare Hulk. I think they're playing a little bit off of that, and they're going with more of that you don't get to block stuff with their Shaker Kenra and Glorybringer.
Right. Yeah, no, I think a lot of the counters distribution stuff would require, as you said, the presence of said Winding Constrictor. But in this deck, yeah, absolutely. The return of the champs here, Earth Shaker Kenra, Glorybringer, and Pia Nalar is making a solo appearance in this deck. Some new creatures that we've seen here. Resilient Kenra, which costs you one and a green for a 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, you may have target creature gets +X/+X till end of turn, where X is Resilient Kenra's power, and you can eternalize it for 4 green-green, essentially giving another creature +4/+4 until end of turn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, this was a card that I would pull in packs and say, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, there's nothing really floating around it now, but wow. Now we all of a sudden just see it straight up powering up other powerful creatures that want to slam up against the opponent's defense and just say, I'm bigger than you. I'm going to win.
True.
And, you know, it's got another 4 of the most popular new card in Rivals of Ixalan, the old Rekindling Phoenix.
Oh, God, so, that card's just so good.
It is. It, I would definitely just venture to say, far and away, best card in Rivals of Ixalan will definitely rule standard for the foreseeable future. But I'm not sure if it's going to really make that jump into modern. So,
no.
You know, like, take advantage of this while you can. Probably one of those cards that if you have a bunch of them, awesome, but go ahead and trade them away if you're not using them, because the value will not be higher as of right now. You're just going to get more and more supply. The value might start dropping a little bit. But, yeah, at $30 at median price here on TCG, that card's nothing to be trifled with. So, super-duper powerful. And it's got the four Merfolk branch walkers. Again, more explore, value, you know, get bigger. And then two Ronus the Indomitable. I mean, if there's a guy who's able to make cards bigger. Plus, with all these other Jade Light Rangers and Resilient Kenras, you're going to be able to attack with Ronus more often than not.
As a question to you, do you see what's lurking in the sideboard?
Are you possibly talking about that Carnage Tyrant?
I am. Uncounterable, hexproof.
Yep.
7/6 for 6.
There's no answer for this card in the blue-black control decks, unless they're running somehow Bantu's Last Reckoning, but I know a lot of people are kind of scared to run that because it cuts you off of all your counter magic for a turn. But, yeah, there's no messing with old Carny T there. And then back by popular demand, the four Abrades. You got the three Magma Sprays because when you're going up against that Scarab God, that's the finishing blow to make sure that thing does not come back. Very necessary. Yeah. And then Struggle to Survive, making a show here. This is one of those Aftermath cards. So Struggle for 2 and a red is an instant, deals damage to target creature equal to the number of lands you control, which will be quite a bit, probably 4 or 5. And then Survive is the Aftermath side, only castable from your graveyard. For 1 and a green, you get a sorcery that says each player shuffles his or her graveyard into his or her library. So there's lots of...
That sounds like a wheel effect for, like, Commit to Memory.
Kind of, but without all the card draw. So there are various ways of... And I'm just going to use the Scarab God again for an example. There were some very, very techie-tech moves being done at Grand Prix Memphis where someone would kill the Scarab God after the beginning of their opponent's end step, which means it has to wait the entire your turn and then the end step of that turn, which would be then be the next beginning of end step to return to their hand. So in theory, what you could do is kill the Scarab God during your opponent's end step, and then during your turn, cast Survive, shuffling that Scarab God back into their deck.
What? Aw, man. Great ways to get rid of Scarab God.
Aren't they
running a bunch of Scarab Gods in those decks?
They are, which is why you're running, you know, the multiple Magma Sprays. And then just by the time... In this deck, it seems like you're dropping cards on turn 2, turn 3, turn 4. By the time they're able to drop it on turn 5, they're already get ran over because they can't cast Scarab God and activate the Scarab God on the same turn if they've only got that 5 mana. So...
True.
But they're probably, if it's a control deck, they're probably not running the Scarab God out into a, you know, tapped out into an empty, into a field. But
that's also probably true.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a really, really cool. Oh, look at that. One Blossoming Defense in the sideboard. Mm-hmm. I love that card. I think that card is criminally underplayed.
Do you see the Thrashing Brontodon there?
Oh, yeah, I do.
You remember that card does, right?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. Destroying artifacts and enchantments while beating face.
Does it possibly eat one Ixalan's Binding?
Oh yeah, it would. Yeah, it would. And Ixalan's Binding definitely showed its face as a very strong control card. I mean, if you're in white, then that might be your premier removal spell over something like Vraska's Contempt.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Blossoming Defense, again, definitely gets around both Ixalan's Binding and Vraska's Contempt, making it a huge card in this current standard. Okay.
All right, so before we get too lost in talking about decks, I think your Constrictor deck's pretty much the same as it's always been. Nothing too new there.
Right. Yeah.
Except they also, funny thing, I see it again in their sideboard, there's that Thrashing Brontodon.
Oh, yeah. Thrashing Brontodon is just doing work. I mean, on its base, a 3/4 for 3 mana is value right off the bat.
I mean, it reminds me of Wooly Thoktar, which was a 5/4 for 3.
yeah, sure. I mean, Wooly Thoktar
was... The good thing here is you still get a big butt that doesn't die to 3-drop removal, takes a revolt trigger to kill with Fatal Push, and guess what? Even when you may get to it, oh, look, you've got an artifact or enchantment I don't like. Get rid of it.
Yep.
You know, there was one... like those creatures you have to crew up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, vehicles, and there were a couple of Immortal Suns floating around the tournament as well. That was pretty exciting to see those drop.
And Radiant Destinies.
And Radiant Destiny, which we will get to, yes, yes. But I think the only inclusion here out of the new Ixalan's block, you know, based on what we've seen before in these Sultai Constrictor decks, is you've got your Jadelight Ranger, like you said, and then your Vraska's Contempt, just for premier removal in this format.
Contempt gets rid of Scarab God, so.
True. Now, I know you like pointing out tech, Greg. So, do you see that new techie tech in the land section?
Are we possibly saying the Hadana's Climb?
We are.
That's actually really strong, because putting 1/1 counters on creatures, and then if that creature has 3/1/1 counters on it, you flip it, then you make a creature gain flying.
Yep.
That's pretty sweet.
Very, very powerful card. I didn't really see the value in this card at first glance when we were looking at previews, but in this deck, that card just seems bananas.
It does, and it's one of the few blue cards in here, which is why I think they've got, that Servant of the Conduit there?
Yep.
Give yourself a little bit of energy, make that Winding Constrictor work, and then Hadana's Climb.
Right. And then, holy cow, they've got two Cartouche of Ambition in the sideboard.
Yeah.
That just says, that's so much life. If you drop, a Walking Ballista, because obviously you're going to get your Constrictors, and your Gear Hulks, but that's just killing stuff and gaining you life. That puts you so far ahead.
It really does.
Jeez. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, you're right. Let's not spend too much time on this. It is a Sultai Constrictor deck. Grixis Energy.
You'd expect from it.
Yep.
I just want to bring up the fact that I think this was to be expected. Grixis was the next logical choice for 3-color to go.
Right. And if I may, for a minute here, Greg, just fawn over just a couple of cards. In the main board, right on top, we have two of Dire Fleet Daredevil. This card has been doing lots of work, and it's quickly being adopted in a lot of people's decks as just a great include for value. And it can get sort of swingy later on in the game when you have that right card you need in your opponent's graveyard.
Yeah.
So I think a 2/1 first strike for 2 is already good. But the fact that you can then use it later on to cast your opponent's Fatal Push or Blossoming Defense or what have you just makes it so good.
It does. All right. So being the fact most of the top 32 is the same old hack, I wanted to talk about something new.
True. And then, wait, before we leave this, there was quite a few also of one of my favorite cards, one that I might have actually bought quite a few of upon seeing the preview. We saw a ton of Gonti, Lord of Luxury, all over the place. I mean, this guy was doing all kinds of work for tons and tons of decks. So, whether it's Blue-Black Control or Grixis Energy, Gonti was definitely making his presence felt. Okay, so that's my piece on Grixis Energy. Let's let's move on.
Some blue-black control decks, as we already knew, they're coming back. Mardu Vehicles was a cool one. I don't think there was any secret tech there.
In Mardu Vehicles?
Rekindling Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, Rekindling Phoenix is just good.
That's it. They're not.
Oh, one other thing.
Settled Wreckage and Grass.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That old Mad Minotaur coming out. I think it's worth pointing out that in this blue-black control deck, by Heath Vance, he included 3 Moment of Craving in the main board, which really says a lot about how he respects mono-red and aggressive decks. Because giving a creature -2/-2 until end of turn and gaining you 2 life is essentially just saying, F you, burn. It's just doing everything that you want to keep yourself in the game against cards that are just coming at you full force, which is really where blue-black control struggles. So it's like he's covering his bases here while also having an extremely powerful late-game plan, but definitely worth noting that those moment of cravings included in the main board. So
Definitely.
Yeah.
So the one that's standing out that is the surprise is black-white City's Blessing.
Excuse me?
What? You've never heard of a City's Blessing deck?
Well, I know of this thing called City's Blessing that is prevalent in the Rivals of Ixalan set, but how exactly does this deck work here, Greg? What are we doing?
Well, this deck's running a playset of Crested Sunmare, 4 Dusk Legion Zealots, 4 Legion Lieutenants, and 4 Martyr of Dusk. Now, if I remember correctly, that Martyr of Dusk gets flying if you have the City's Blessing.
It does.
Yeah. So ultimately, just some good efficient creatures down in the top for what you have. The Crested Sunmare, of course, with the extra life gain you get from things like Call to Feast and Queen's Commission, it's just good. But then what this deck's really strong about is Radiant Destiny.
Yes.
Which is at 3 drop, Ascend. So if you have 10 permanents, you get the City's Blessing. And when it comes to play, you choose a creature type. More than likely, you're going to choose horses. No, 8 vampires. And it'll give them all +1/+1 and vigilance. So making it so those creatures do not have to tap is really good. And it was just a fun deck. I know you were talking about how it was getting played in a feature match.
Yeah, I mean, when you see somebody have 3 Radiant Destinies out in play at the same time, and then they cast Call to the Feast, you're putting down 3/4/4 white vampire creature tokens with lifelink. That's 12 lifelinking power on the board. That's insane. I mean, you know, not to mention that you saw a couple Crested Sunmares hit the battlefield. And if you're not sure, Crested Sunmare is a 5/5 horse for 3 white-white.
Wait, did you say horse?
I said horse, yes.
Oh, no.
And other horses you control have indestructible. At the beginning of each end step, if you gained life this turn, which isn't hard in this deck, create a 5/5 white horse creature token. Oh, by the way, remember, it's indestructible. So you're starting to create 5/5 at a base, you know, with these Radiant Destinies. They could be 6/6, 7/7s, and they're indestructible. Did I mention they're indestructible? They're also indestructible, so that just makes it absolutely insanely powerful. This deck looks so sweet, and I'm so glad that it actually made it as far up as it did. And in the sideboard, you can see said Immortal Suns.
Yeah, this deck just seems like a lot of fun. I would probably play it. Do you see in the sideboard that Chua Profane Possession?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I was about to mention that myself.
Because that is not only a card that allows you to exile problems, when it finally flips, it gives you those problems. They're yours now to play with.
It does. I mean, you can exile an opponent's Scarab God with this card and then put it into play under your control. After it flips.
I mean, it doesn't do much if you do that, but hey, you could definitely do things like that.
Right. You'd obviously have to pay the activated cost, but you could. You'd probably just want to exile the Scarab God and just leave it.
Yeah.
Which you
and
can
it's
do.
It's not like they ever get it back from this either.
Right. You do have the ability to just exile stuff and then not cast it, but you do have to flip it after you have 3 or more cards exiled with it.
Yeah, you don't get that choice.
It doesn't have a tap trigger, so if you have all the mana, then you could just exile multiple creatures, you know, at the same time, even though the triggers all, you know, will happen. That is, again, if you have all the mana in the world.
So, I have all the mana in the world.
You know what? I do, too. Let's see who does more more profanely perceived. Bleh. Okay, never mind.
Whose procession is the most profane?
Well, is it anointed? Because then you'd be all over it.
Oh, man, would I ever.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would.
All right. So with that, there isn't much else to talk about with what's been going on in Standard. There's some cool decks. I see a Jund list in here, though.
Yep, right above a white-black cycling list. We've seen that very few and far between, so innovation abound.
I'm actually pretty sure that's supposed to be white-blue.
Oh, not white-black. Duh.
They didn't put the U in there. They used the B.
Yep. Where you at? I don't know. So, all right, well, that rounds us out for Grand Prix Memphis. And, of course, it is Friday, so we'll have another tournament coming up this weekend.
What is playing this weekend?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, let me take a quick look and to see where you guys can find it.
Yep.
Ooh, there's a Magic Online Championship.
That's right. The Magic Online Championship is this weekend.
And then next weekend is going to be Team Trios Constructed in Madrid.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, no shortage of awesome Magic events coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
get your fill, get on Twitch, watch that stuff, and we will do our best to bring to you results, news, information regarding those said events. So.
Yeah. And then, wow, there's so much. There is a lot. You know, 2 weeks until Masters 25, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could not be more excited for that. I think I'm going to go ahead and try to nab myself a box and then just try to pick up the rest as singles, because the fact that, let's not forget, each of these packs contains a foil card, and some of these foil commons are going to be amazing. So.
Yeah. I mean, the Relentless Rats are already pre-selling at like $10.
Yeah. And I know there was a Judge promo, but can you imagine being the guy to pull the foil Imperial Recruiter? Car is going to be more expensive than Jace. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, not a foil Jace.
No, not a foil Jace. So, all right. Well, that's going to kind of wind us down. Now we're gonna talk a little bit about our giveaway that we're going to be doing on episode 50. We'll be announcing. Because we love our listeners. Now, we don't have any foil Imperial Recruiters. Heck, we don't even have any foil Jaces to give away. But what we do have, I mentioned last episode, is I have a sealed Commander deck right here behind me. And this deck is the 2014 Mono White Nahiri the Lithomancer Commander deck, also known as Forged in Stone. You might remember this deck having such highlights as there is a Containment Priest in there.
Yep.
And there's a whole lot of other really good cards that are, you know, floating somewhere between $5 and $10, as well as obviously the Commander. But what we wanted to do is, since we have an entire deck that we can give away, we want all of you to enter, and we will be giving away as much of this as we possibly can. So what we require of you is we're staying away from social media on this one. Sometimes I just get fried on that social media stuff. It's so frustrating. But anyway, so we'll keep it light. What we're going to ask of you is send us an email, thewincondition podcast@gmail.com. Send us an email. As we are the Win Condition Podcast, we want to hear your craziest stories of your craziest win condition. This could be in any format, can be any deck, it could be Commander, it could be Modern, it could be Standard, it could be Tiny Leaders, it could be Legacy.
It could be partial to our favorite deck.
There you go. Right? It could even be Vintage, if that's your jam. It could be Old School. It could be Canadian Highlander.
Whoa,
you know?
Whoa. Could it be possibly Old School Casual?
It could be Old School
Casual. You know, where
you're
running like 20 Raging Goblins and like 20 other cards, so you could just pop them out and give them like double stuff and kill a player in a turn.
The Win Condition does not support this type of filthy casual behavior, but if it is part of your crazy win condition story, please send it to us. And we will review all the entries, and we will pick the top however many we have. It could be top three. It could be the top five. It could even be top 10, because there are 100 cards in this deck.
Could it be top 100?
Well, if you want to start handing out basic lands, I guess.
I mean, if people want them.
Yeah, do we have 100 listeners?
Maybe.
Oh my god, there's a Sun Titan in this deck. I didn't even see that. That's pretty
sweet. Oh yeah, isn't that awesome?
That, yeah. Oh my gosh. There's, what else do we have in here? For those of you who might not...
Oh, don't forget, there's the tokens.
There are? Yeah. Yeah,
and
there's
an
the tokens.
An oversized card.
Right, and you know, I know a lot of people that artifacts and equipment is their thing. You know, there is that masterwork of ingenuity.
Man, so much. Anyhow, you know where to send it. Where can we find each other in case we want to talk to each other on social media and not on this?
Well, if you'd like to talk to us on social media, you can get a hold of me at MTG_Sean on Twitter.
And you can find me at NoobSlasher2003 on Twitter.
The show is at The Win Condition. Our email address, as we said before, is thewincondition@gmail.com. Go ahead and check out our YouTube channel. We did receive a very nice listener email this last week. No questions, no anything, just a nice email, and we really, really do appreciate that.
That
so
was
thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you
so much. Shout out to you and all of you guys listening. We really appreciate it. Hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. And all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.
Try to stay dry out there.